Hi, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. This
what
right
up,
here.
What up, man?
Super Bowl champ Chris Canty is joining us this morning. You good?
I'm good, Jenna. Ready to get to it.
I love it. Well, we have a ton to get to this morning. So much, so little time, and we got to start with the game going on tonight. It is Thursday Night Football. It is the Cowboys with another chance to prove that they are better than their record might suggest. They are in Chicago tonight to face the Bears. Fox Bet has Dallas as 3-point favorites. Despite both teams being 6-6, Nick, we dive in with you. The Cowboys actually good enough to be road favorites? This surprised you this morning.
It surprised me Monday when the line came out. A long-standing game in sports media is guess the lines. I think Mike and the Mad Dog invented it. Our friend Cousin Sal, along with Bill Simmons, have been doing it now for a decade.
Full disclosure, you and the producers sit here
exactly.
And do it
every Monday.
Breaks, not annoying at all.
Okay, every Monday, Matt Katanik, Sam Pepper, and I, the producers of the show, and myself, guess the lines together. And I consider myself pretty good at that game. I was 4 points off, which is an enormous amount. I figured it'd be Chicago by one. Because it's in Chicago, because they have the same record, because the Cowboys haven't played they have played one complete football game since week three. It was the game against Philly. That even though Chicago's been disappointing, they actually have won three of their last five, while the Cowboys have lost three of their, or won three of the last four, I should say, while the Cowboys have lost three of their last four. But I know the public likes the Cowboys. Cowboys have more talent. So I figured the Bears wouldn't be the full 3-point home favorites you typically are. But to see Dallas, what this is saying is if this game were in Dallas, Dallas be 8 or 9 point favorites, get out of here. What evidence do we have that the Cowboys are better than the Bears other than preseason power rankings? But by the way, the Bears were pretty strongly considered preseason power
rankings.
They
were some people's Super Bowl favorites.
Right, based on how they had done at the end of last, or how they did throughout last season up until the playoffs. So, no, I don't think the Cowboys deserve to be favored. No, I don't think that the right team is favored in this game. And I think this is one of the rare times where I think Vegas has it wrong.
Well, here's where I use your argument again. I mean, you talked about how the Dallas Cowboys are a supremely talented team that's been underachieving for the most part this season. In all but one game, they've been favorited. They're favorited tonight. It's a situation where I think that Vegas recognizes that the Cowboys, from a talent standpoint, have quality players at premium positions.
Sure.
You look at the quarterback, you look at offensive line, you look at wide receiver, you look at running back, you look at pass rusher. Those are all positions that are important in toward being able to win in the NFL. When you look at the Chicago Bears, the biggest question is, who is Mitch Trubisky? We don't know.
Unfortunately, I think we might know. I think there
might be.
Well,
we might know, but the answer is a negative. It's not the answer in the affirmative, and that's the problem with that team. I'm not going to be fooled by two wins over the Lions and a win over the New York Giants. Both of those teams are in the bottom half of the league defensively. So I don't think that the win streak that we're seeing the Bears on, that 3 out of 4, is a legit win streak, because I remember that Sunday night game out in L.A. when they benched Mitch Trubisky. They tried to hide it and say it was an injury.
It's a little hurt.
But that wasn't the case. He was playing poorly in that game, and the Rams have been a better defense this year in comparison to the 2 years prior. But, I mean, I look at the Dallas Cowboys. To me, the key for them in this game is not turning over the football. I mean, if you hold on to the football, I think you're in much better shape to be able to win this game. Don't give that Chicago Bears offense any life by giving them extra possessions in short fields. I think if they starve that Bears offense and they make them put together 8, 10, 12 play drives,
right,
I don't have a lot of confidence that Mitch Trubisky can move that team up and down the field.
Nick, is there anything you could see from the Cowboys tonight to make you change your perception of who they really are at this point in the season against this Bears team? Nothing.
No. I mean, they could win, by the way. Listen, I think the Bears are going to win. But to be clear, even if the Cowboys win, no, you're not going to all of a sudden say, oh, the real Cowboys have arrived. The real Cowboys have been here all year long. They are an average to slightly below average NFL team. The Bears do have one thing on their resume the Cowboys don't. One at least high-quality win. The Bears did go and beat Minnesota once already this season. The Cowboys have done nothing like that. If the Cowboys win tonight, it's their best win of the year. But by the way, if they win, the Bears fall to below 500, so they'll still not have a win over a team at 500
right,
or above. So I also think that while we look at the Cowboys as a team that, despite how bad they've been, has some margin of error because of the division, given the Vikings' loss this past week, this Monday night, the Bears and the Rams both have to feel like maybe we're still alive in this thing. That if the Vikings fall apart,
yeah.
if the Vikings, because we looked at it a couple weeks ago, where I looked at it as we know the five NFC playoff teams are going to be Packers, Vikings, Saints, Seahawks, Niners, and then the NFC East
winner. The only thing
East
to be
winner.
Determined is the order.
The order exactly. and the NFC East winner. The Vikings falling the way they did this past weekend and the week in, when they lost to Kansas City, when Kansas City had its backup quarterback, it opened things up a bit to where they're 8-4, the Rams are 7-5, the Bears are 6-6, that if the Vikings go from 8-3 to 9-7, could that playoff spot come available? So I don't think the Bears are in we're just on to next season mode, even if they should be.
No.
I think they are still preaching, we are still in this, we can get hot at the right time. And your point about turnovers, Canty, is exactly right, which is why I feel like even if Dak's been better than Zeke this year, if the Cowboys are going to win, it's got to be through Zeke, because Dak, as well as he's played, he's turned the ball over at a higher rate than he even turned it over in his bad seasons. And I think that Zeke is much less likely to give the Bears a short field to work with, which is what you're talking about, that they need to score.
No, they absolutely do. But in looking at the Cowboys situation, I mean, if they win that Week 16 matchup against the Philadelphia Eagles in one more win, then they're going to be the team that represents the NFC East in the playoffs. So it's a strange position for them to be in, because
they don't have to have it.
Because they don't have to have it. That's the thing. But in terms of what's going on around that team and all the noise surrounding their head coach, I think this win would go a long ways into quieting a lot of that. Because right now, I mean, when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, the whole conversation around the team is about everything except the execution on the field. And so, you know, I hear Dak Prescott.
And that's where the conversation should be right now, if they want to refocus.
And that's where it should be. And Dak Prescott talked about it this week. He said, we've done a lot of talking, and talk is cheap.
Yep.
We have to focus on actually going out there and executing and being productive and putting ourselves in situations where we can win games rather than finding ways to lose games. And so when you have a talented team going on the road against Chicago, who would seemingly be a quality opponent, this is an opportunity for you on a national stage to answer some serious questions about who your team is and what you want your 2019 season to be about. A season that started off with championship aspirations. You can put yourself in a really good position going into the last month of the season, getting a quality win on the road.
What do you want to see from the Cowboys besides not turning the ball over? Maybe get Amari Cooper involved. You haven't seen much of him. See more from the run game. Is there one thing that you're looking for tonight?
Maybe I'm odd in this. Looking at it differently. The Cowboys are not in a position where they should be, or we should be discussing how we'd like them to look in victory. Get a damn win. Just win the game like that. There are no style points to be had at this point. Like, for example, last week, the Packers played the Giants. Packers had just lost to the Niners. The Giants are a bad team. Packers are a good team. All wins are not created equal there. Had they squeaked out that win against the Giants, it doesn't feel great. You wanted to see them dominate as they did in the second half. The Cowboys would take a 52-yard Brett Maher field goal at the gun to win by one and just escape. Because the reality for Dallas is this. Since week three, they are 3-6. Those wins involve a game against Detroit, a bad Detroit team. That's a 6-point game midway through the fourth. A win against the Giants, an awful Giant team. That's a 5-point game midway through the fourth. They have had one excellent start-to-finish game since the third week of the season. The game against Philly, which is the key moment of their season, really, because it gives them that tiebreaker. It's why they lock up this division if they beat Philly and only win one other game. So if you're a Cowboys fan, what do you want to see? Man, what you want to see is not a reason for Jason Garrett to be fired Friday morning, which a third straight loss would be exactly that.
On to the Lakers now. Second night of a back-to-back, but they apparently didn't get the memo. The one that reminded you you're tired and you're a step slower in the back end of a back-to-back. L.A. came out firing from start to finish. Both sides of the ball taking out the Utah Jazz. 121-96 for their 10th straight road win. AD pouring in 26 while LeBron added 20. Nick, how wide is the gap now between the Lakers and the rest of the West?
Enormous. The gap between the Lakers and the rest of the West is enormous. The only team that the gap is not enormous between the Lakers and them is the Lakers and the Bucks. and you got the two best players in the league, LeBron and Giannis. Both teams are 19-3. Both teams are three games up in their respective conferences. Both teams appear to be on a collision course quarterway through the season to meet in the NBA Finals, which would be a glorious chance, by the way, for Giannis to not only figuratively, but almost literally, take the belt from LeBron, or for LeBron to hold him off. But we don't have to go there quite yet. The Lakers went to Denver, a team that going into the game was 8-2 at home with wins over Miami, Philly, Houston, and Boston, and led the final three quarters of that game, the entirety except for 19 seconds. Won that game. While it was a close game, the Lakers were in full control. Mm-hmm. They then the very next night go to Utah, what I consider can't be the toughest back-to-back that exists in the NBA, at Denver, at Utah. The altitude of Elevation. Denver, the fans of Utah, like at Lakers, at Clippers is tougher teams, but there's no travel. You're staying in the same hotel, you're playing in the same building. They go to Utah, a team that was 8-1 at home going into last night, with wins over the Clippers, the Sixers, the Bucks.
Good wins.
And they annihilated them. They led for all of the final three quarters to the point where LeBron was shoelessly celebrating with a few minutes left in the game because his work here was done. And while the story through the first quarter of the season has been for the Lakers, them being the Lakers again, being the best team in the NBA and LeBron leading the league in assists, what is quickly, I think, going to be the story of the second quarter of the season is that man you saw right there, Anthony Davis, and his dominance on the defensive end to go along with his extraordinary play on the offensive end. There was a two-time defensive player of the year on the court last night in Rudy Gobert. He didn't look anything close to the defensive player of the year this year. That looked like Anthony Davis.
No, you're absolutely right. And for me, it starts on the defensive end when you look at this Lakers team. If you watched the game last night, I mean, you saw the first few offensive possessions, they looked a little bit out of sorts, yep. But then they picked it up, especially on the defensive end in the second half of that first quarter. And then they go on that 16-4 run that started with that Kyle Kuzma buzzer beater, that three-pointer at the end of it. Yep. And then they ended ultimately in the middle of the second quarter. But the biggest thing that I saw last night was Rondo's ability to be able to manage the game.
He was excellent.
Having him as an additional ball handler with LeBron James not having to be the primary ball handler on the court at all times, I think that's going to be huge for LeBron throughout the regular season, but it's also going to lead to a fresher LeBron once we get to the postseason. So having him and his playmaking ability, being able to operate the offense, get the ball to guys in their spots on the court, I think that's big. I mean, he finished, what is it, two rebounds shy of a triple-double?
One rebound. He finished 14-9-12, so yeah,
one rebound shy of a triple-double. So if you're getting that kind of production from Rondo, 32 minutes last night, 25 minutes the night before, I think that's going to lead to a positive result for the Lakers, not only with the regular season and the standings once we get to the postseason, but their ability to actually finish the drill and compete for a championship.
And by the way, Jenna, the Lakers are doing this start with Avery Bradley being injured the last few weeks, one of I consider their most important players because of his ability to guard opposing point guards, and with Kyle Kuzma still not really being himself.
No.
Kuzma finished 4 of 11 last night, and two of those makes were buzzer beaters. Then in the first quarter into the second quarter, he still seems a little out of sorts after missing training camp in the beginning of the season with that injury. I would say Kuzma went into the year their fourth most important player. Avery Bradley, their fifth most important player. They've been without either one of them. They've very few games where all five of their projected best players have been together, and they're still 19-3.
How impressed have you been by every guy in this team not named LeBron at this point?
Well, go ahead, please.
No, I've been really impressed. One of the notes that I made from last night's game is if you have KCP, Kuzma, and Rondo going 7-for-12 from three-point range, then opponents and teams have no shots.
No shots.
I mean, if they have the ability to consistently knock down perimeter shots, that's going to space the floor. That's going to create lanes to get some easy buckets at the rim. So, I mean, you saw with the Lakers' performance last night, they were able to get some scores in transition to get themselves in a rhythm, and that's going to be big. I mean, the Lakers, when they outscore their opponent in transition, they're 12-1 this season.
Wow.
So that's got to be their formula for success. It starts on the defensive end, and there's a reason why the King, LeBron James, is calling Anthony Davis is the defensive player of the year, because that's how good AD has been up until this point.
And I'll add one other name, because you and I talked about him before the show. Dwight is playing his role perfectly. Now, he had a three last night in garbage time. That's not his role. That was just fun and happy.
They were clowning at that point.
They were exactly right. But Dwight is bringing energy. defense and rebounding off the bench. And we've talked about whether it's smart or not to play a center alongside Anthony Davis. Is it the best to have Anthony Davis playing the five? And it probably is long term, but with JaVale giving you a decent few minutes and Dwight giving you legitimate minutes, then all of a sudden it's like, well, let AD do what makes him happy, where you can switch, where you can play the four, where you can play more out on the perimeter.
The one thing I do like about JaVale being with AD is JaVale will do a lot of the dirty work, the offensive rebounds, second chance points, and you saw that in the game last night.
And one other thing before we go, because I have been, and not to pat myself on the back, but I've been very accurate on predicting the narratives that are coming with this Laker team. Going into the year, I said they're going to get out to a very hot start and folks will blame the schedule. We saw that immediately. We then started to, and then once they had this back-to-back, I said, if and when they win it, what you're going to start to hear is, well, when you really look at it, is the West actually as good as it once was? And you started to hear that yesterday. Here's the next narrative that's coming. I guarantee it. The Lakers shouldn't be trying this hard. Are the Lakers doing themselves a disservice by putting so much energy into the regular season? And what, just so they get to host the LA Clippers who have their same building in the conference finals? People are grasping, running out of reasons to try to discredit the team with the best player ever and a guy who right now is not only playing like Defensive Player of the Year, but Anthony Davis moving up the MVP rankings also as well, and a team that seemed to be in disarray one off season ago and now has a roster that looks like it's been together for 4 years. And so because of that, people are going to try to find different reasons. And if it's not going to be able to be the record, if it's not going to be the schedule, it's going to be really, would the Lakers be better off load managing rather than, you know, trying to win basketball games? Because there's not a lot of excuses left other than to say, oh, that's the best team in basketball.
And that rumblings of that have already started. Is this sustainable, this pace that they're exactly at this quickly out of the gate? All right, on to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers now, still fighting for the one seed in the NFC. Good news for them, they're just a game back. Better news for them, they face a 3-9 Washington team this Sunday. Despite coming off a win last week, Aaron Rodgers knows he and his teammates still have some work to do, still have some sacrifices to make if they want to make a Super Bowl push.
There's been a lot of guys who've really had to embrace a specific role this year. And I think the beauty in seeing the chemistry of the team and the personality of the team has been the response from those guys, that it hasn't been and worrying about their own stats or ego. It's been an embracing of the challenge and of the responsibility. And I think with that responsibility comes a lot of accountability as well. And I think guys have embraced their roles, and it's collectively made us a lot tighter group and a better team.
How about this, Nick? Even Aaron Rodgers looks better without a mustache. Okay?
Okay.
Win or lose. You think the Packers, Nick, need more from Aaron Rodgers if they do want to make a Super Bowl run? More out of him than what you've seen this year?
I do. And this was the team I picked to go to the Super Bowl. This is the team you picked to go to the Super Bowl. And I don't know about you, Kenny, but I think I actually do know. Mm-hmm. The math was they're going to be better coached this year, at least less drama surrounding the coach-quarterback relationship. They brought in some defensive talent in Za'Darius and Preston Smith. They are going to be less reliant on Aaron Rodgers just making miracles week in, week out. But when need be, he'll still be able to make those miracles. That when need be, at the final month of the season and into the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers will reassert himself as one of, if not the most talented player in the whole league. And right now, the offense is underachieving. I think it's fair to say. Now, the team's not underachieving at 9-3, and given their schedule, it really does have 13-3 written all over it. The only game they'll be an underdog in the rest of the way is at Minnesota. They've already beaten Minnesota. So I think 12-4 is their basement, and 13-3 is realistic. But they're 17th in the NFL in yards per play. They're 14th in passing offense. They're 21st in third down offense. all of those will have to get better if they are going to go through the gauntlet of the NFC. And the way those get better is Aaron Rodgers gets back to playing an MVP level of football. He's been brilliant in the red zone, and the team's been great in the red zone, second in the league. And he's been brilliant on not turning the ball over, second in the league in fewest turnovers on offense. So in that regard, that's kind of helped their otherwise mediocre offensive statistics. But in the playoffs, beating New Orleans or Seattle or San Francisco or whomever, you are going to need the Smith brothers to show up, the running game to show up, and Aaron Rodgers to be superb. So, yeah, I do think if they're going to reach their ultimate goal, the Super Bowl, he does have to be better. And if they're going to get a bye, he's going to have to be great the final month of the year.
Yeah, he does have to be better, but the offensive line and the running game is going to have to help Aaron Rodgers out if that's going to be the case. One of the reasons why we like the Green Bay Packers to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl was because we saw Matt LaFleur down in Tennessee when he was the OC. They were a run-centric offense. So if you gave some balance to Aaron Rodgers, you wouldn't force that offensive line to have to drop back and protect, you know, 40, 50 times a game. And I think that's got to be the formula for what they do on the offensive side of things. Defensively, the Packers have got to be better. They have to be better, and it starts with being able to stop the run. Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, we know they can both get after it, combined 20 and a half sacks. But I just look at this in terms of earning the right to rush the passer. If they don't create downs and distances where they can terrorize the opposing quarterback, well, it's going to be hard for that defense to be able to have some success. So for me, that defense has to tighten up against the run game. And then, of course, on the offensive side of the ball, they've got to be more effective being able to have production in the run game.
And I think the defense, we got a little enamored with it the first couple weeks of the year against the Bears and then Kirk Cousins before he really started the extraordinary stretch of his season. We saw the infusion of talent. We saw the pass rush. And now that we have only a quarter of the season left, you realize, all right, yards and yards per play, they're 28th and 29th. Like in yards per play, so on any individual play, how effective is the opposing team's offense? They are surrounded by Detroit, Miami, Cincinnati, and Arizona. That is not exactly the company you want to be in. I don't know if the defense is going to get much better, which is why I think Aaron Rodgers is going to have to be brilliant. Maybe not the level of brilliance he needed to be in years past if they wanted to get to a Super Bowl, but better than he's been this last
month. Well, what I want Aaron Rodgers to look like is more the guy we saw in Kansas City versus the guy we saw against the Chargers and San Francisco 49ers. I mean, both of those fronts got after Aaron Rodgers pretty good, but I think when you had some production from the running back position, both in the run game and the pass game, I think you're going to get a better version of Aaron Rodgers, and that's why Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones are such a critical part of what the Packers are going to do offensively.
Well, that's just it. Then the question becomes, moving forward, does he have what around him, the talent around him, to be able to do what he needs to do to make that Super Bowl push? Talk about the Patriots, who some say will still be in the Super Bowl. Despite their 10-2 record, though, it has been a rather underwhelming season for Tom Brady. And yesterday, a new column on NBC Sports Boston pinpointed all the reasons we may be seeing the end of Brady's career in New England. It's a great read if you get a chance to read it. Remember, Brady will be a free agent this offseason. What do you think, Nick? Will this be his final season in a Patriots uniform?
Full disclosure here, I hadn't even been thinking about this, even though we knew Brady's contract's expiring, even though I've been as loud as anyone that Brady is in a far different place of his career than he was in even 2 years ago. But then I see this column, and the column's written by Tom Curran. Tom Curran is as plugged into this team as anybody. Tom Curran wrote a book with Julian Edelman, Brady's best friend on the team. And Tom Curran says at the very beginning of this column, flatly, barring a seismic change, this is going to be Tom Brady's last year in Boston. Does not say in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Says it's going to be his last year with the Patriots. And so I read that and I'm like, well, what else is he going to tell me in this piece? And the more you looked at quotes from Robert Kraft back in 2013 when Tom Brady got his last major contract extension, where Robert Kraft says, we just can't be the type of team that spends 18 to 20% of a salary cap on a quarterback. And that was, you know, when Tom Brady was still in the prime of his career. And then you remember what happened this offseason, Canty. This offseason, Tom Brady's three previous years, here's what he had done. 3 years ago, executed the single greatest comeback in the history of the Super Bowl to win his fifth championship. 2 years ago, wins league MVP, throws for 500 yards in the Super Bowl that they ultimately lose to Nick Foles and the Eagles. Last year, he goes toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes, even though he didn't play great in the AFC Championship game. They go on the road, win that game, win their sixth Super Bowl. And this offseason, not only did he have to sing for his supper for a contract extension, he sang for it, said to the media, "You guys think I deserve one? Ask Mr. Kraft, do a poll," and didn't get it. If Bill Belichick was not comfortable giving Tom Brady a contract extension and refused to, even though Brady wanted one, after those last 3 years, the hell is he going to do this year when they don't win the Super Bowl, when they don't make the Super Bowl, when Brady is having the worst year he has had, arguably of his career, inarguably of the last 15 years? So I read this column and I said, could Tom Brady have 20 quarters left as a Patriot quarterback? The four regular season games, and if I'm right and they're going to lose either to Houston or Baltimore or Kansas City, whoever they play in the first the divisional playoff game, yeah, he could. And I don't think that means he's got 20 quarters left in the NFL, because he does not want to hang it up. And there are going to be plenty of teams that would love to have even a 43-year-old Tom Brady. But the column is persuasive, and the history is persuasive, that unless they go on a what I would consider very unlikely Super Bowl run, I do think this is his last year in New England.
Well, here's the thing. I understand all the points that you're trying to make, but I don't understand why everybody wants to bury Tom Brady and the Patriots with this situation. They're a double-digit win team already through the first 12 games, and they're in the driver's seat to have a top seed in the AFC, either one or two, just depending how things shake out the rest of the way with the Baltimore Ravens. But, I mean, they got this game coming up against the Kansas City Chiefs, and then guess what? Their next three opponents, you're talking about the Buffalo Bills, Cincinnati Bengals, and Miami Dolphins.
Well, the Bills are tough now. But
the Bills are tough, but the Bills got to go to Foxborough.
Yep.
And so I just have a hard time seeing Josh Allen be able to beat Tom Brady in Foxborough, knowing what's at stake. And the Patriots value having that first round bye in the postseason. So if we're talking about the Patriots being one of eight teams competing for the championships once we get to January football, then yeah, I think they got a pretty good chance of making their ninth straight AFC championship game. And if that's the position they're going to be in, I have a hard time betting against them not to make it back to the Super Bowl. But based on what I've seen on the offensive end, you have to be a little bit concerned about the Patriots, because usually by this time of year,
we figured out
what kind of identity they need to
and
be
in order to
win football games. We saw that at the end of last year when they turned into a two-back running game with Rob Gronkowski as an in-line blocker at the tight end spot. So I haven't seen any semblance of what they're going to be in terms of being able to consistently move the ball on the offensive side, and you have to be a little bit concerned of the optics you saw on that Sunday night game with Brady screaming at his receivers.
Well, I'm really glad you bring that up, because, by the way, if they make the Super Bowl, I agree with you, he'll be back. I think if they make the Super Bowl, he'll be back, because that's, even by Patriots standards, it's a hugely successful season. I don't think you have to win it. But let's just assume, for the sake of argument, because I don't think you would dismiss as an impossibility that they get, if they play Houston again in the first round of the playoffs, that they lose. If Baltimore all of a sudden somehow falls to the three line, Baltimore gets them, but whatever.
Yeah.
Let's just say they have a disappointing run in this year's postseason pre-Super Bowl. It's not only that we know what Belichick feels about moving on a year early rather than a year late. It's that it seems to me pretty clear that Tom Brady disagrees with me that he is a big part of the problem in New England right now. That Tom Brady, I would imagine, feels let down by the lack of weapons, frustrated by that he has to get with these rookies and young guys and that the timing routes aren't there, that they didn't replace Gronk, that they didn't never adequately replace Brandon Cooks, who they traded for, got him for 1 year, moved him out, and since then tried to replace him with Josh Gordon, gone, Antonio Brown, gone. And you do have to wonder if Tom Brady, after feeling like, okay, you guys wouldn't give me the extension I wanted, you wouldn't put the weapons around me I wanted, I've had the most frustrating year personally in what, at least maybe ever, in the last 15 years, if we throw out the blown ACL year, the LA Chargers, where he owns a home, gonna be in the market for a quarterback next year, man. Like, now, do they want to move on from a 37-year-old to get a 43-year-old?
No.
I don't know, but if they're trying to get market share, Tom Brady sure can help. To me, it wouldn't, if they have a disappointing end in the playoffs, it might be where both sides say, you know what? You think I'm washed. I think you haven't done enough for me. You didn't want to pay me. I'm the greatest player ever. You could have locked this up a year ago when I wanted the extension. You wouldn't give it to me. Maybe the Bulls moved on from Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Like the last time the Bulls were saying, listen, we're not bringing back Phil. We're not bringing back Scotty. And Michael said, all right, I'm done with this. He clearly still wanted to play basketball. He came back. Like
the 49ers moved on from Joe Montana.
And I know they had Steve Young, obviously, and the Patriots don't. But sometimes for the greatest ever, it's messy at the end.
No, you're absolutely right. But I have to look at the other side of that, which is what is Bill Belichick's alternative at the quarterback position? What, you going to roll with Jarrett Stidham? I mean, they don't have somebody that they've been grooming, that's been waiting in the wing. It was Jimmy Garoppolo, yeah. But we see Tom Brady went over Bill Belichick's head to Robert Kraft and forced that trade. So it's a situation right now. You're as loyal as your options. I don't think Bill Belichick and the Patriots are going to have many options in terms of replacing a player like Tom Brady and then being able to keep it pushing in terms of competing for championships.
Real hard, though, to picture Tom Brady in a uniform that isn't a Patriots uniform.
Can I give you a make-believe scenario where everyone wins?
Go.
Trade Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels for Dak Prescott. Dallas gets its coach, gets its quarterback. They get the biggest star in the league. Patriots get Dak. I'm sure they'd love to pay him $40 million. Works out great.
That's a great
I think we'd rename this show First Things First on the Cowboys if the Cowboys had.
Right.
I really think that's what would happen.
Back here, First Things First, now joined by former All-Pro running back, Brian Westbrook. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Good morning.
What up, my G?
Big win for Villanova last night.
Big win.
Over Penn. Smacking
up on Penn. Brian, who went to Villanova, yes, big sir. Win by Villanova.
Yeah, so Nick and I can't hold our heads up about it.
Well, at least your team's defending national champ, man.
We are, but we didn't look like it last night against
once
Purdue.
Once proud Syracuse Orange, losing right. Three in a row.
That's where you went, but let's talk about a game that you both played. Little football. Cowboys. They are about as average as you can get. 6-6 heading into tonight's game against the Bears in Chicago. They've lost 3 of their last 4, averaging just 21 points per game. Pick your reason why. Play calling, personnel, desire, drive. Troy Aikman knows this team as well as anyone. Weighed in with his thoughts about why the team isn't performing up to their talent. Take a listen.
I always believe everything starts at the top, and that's not to say that everything's the fault at the top, but that's where it begins. And you know, we've got a head coach who we know for 10 years has been saying that we're focused on Tuesday, today. That's all we're worried about, is having the best practice today that we can possibly have. And that's been his messaging throughout, and the owner's talking about getting on a run and winning the Super Bowl. And they've lost 3 of their last 4. So I think there's a lot of factors that have played into this. Coaching obviously hasn't been great at times in certain situations. Players haven't played great, but the front office hasn't been great in allowing the head coach to do his job either.
Nick, what do you think about what Troy had to say there?
With respect, Troy, I totally disagree. Oh. I think the front office's number one job is to supply the head coach with talented players. And they have done that in Dallas. Now, they add extra noise. Those other things that I would consider, ideally, your front office provides you with great players and is seen but never heard, or never seen or heard. Like, you know what I mean? That the head coach is the only voice or face of the organization other than the quarterback, who's a default voice and face. So I get that it's not perfect, but I would sure as hell rather have the draft history and re-sign my talented players history the Cowboys have than an organization where, man, we don't never hear from the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals recently the owner of the Miami Dolphins. They stay totally out of it. But the front office does a bad job in picking players, doesn't do a good job in retaining their talented players, and they are constantly stuck at a talent deficit. So I think Jerry and Stephen Jones are an enormous net positive for the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. You just have to deal with the noise. You disagree with me.
Well, I can tell absolutely. From the list. And I'll tell you why I disagree with you. Back in 2004, we had T.O. on the team. Great year. Everything went good. We went to the Super Bowl, ended up losing to the Patriots. Still hurts me to this day. The next year, we had to deal with noise. T.O. had an issue with Donovan. T.O. had an issue with the front office. And the noise, same exact team, same exact talented team that you're talking about that the Cowboys have, and we ended up 6-10. The noise is what hurt us. When you talk about the Dallas Cowboys, the noise. Started early on in the offseason. The Zeke contract, noise right there. You talk about Dak's contract, noise right there. The last 2 weeks, the Patriots game, you're talking about noise. The coaches are doing their football job as far as special teams. That's noise right there. Then last week, you talk about the head coach and trying to find a new head coach and you're not securing his job. That's more noise. And so as talented as this football team is, at this point with all the noise, they can't overcome that to be able to win the games, and they still have a chance to make the playoffs. So Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, they haven't helped this team. They've supplied them a bunch of players, which is good. The noise is what continues to hurt this football team.
Completely agree with you, B-Dub. And you talked about Zeke and Dak's contracts. Another contract that was talked about a lot was Jason Garrett's contract and the fact that he was coming into this season with no years remaining on his deal. Now, most teams won't opt to go into a season with a lame duck coach. That's in part because it's important to make sure that there's the perception for the players in the locker room that the head coach, the front office, and the owner is in lockstep. And with this situation with Jason Garrett, it's clear that that's not the case just because there's a lot of show and prove that Jason Garrett has in Jerry Jones' eyes. And so when you have the potential to question the head coach and whether or not he's going to be your guy moving forward, well, if you're the owner in that position, how do you think the players feel in that locker room? I mean, all the players in that locker room understand that the owner is the one that has final say because he signs the checks. But the owner and the head coach have to be seen as being in agreement with the decisions that are made for the football team. And it's clear right now with the Dallas Cowboys, that's not the case. Look at what happened after the Buffalo Bills game. Jason Garrett said, we're going to evaluate the kicker as well as all of the other positions on the team after those missed field goals. But then Jerry Jones comes out and says, Brett Maher is our guy. Well, I mean, what are the players supposed to do in that situation? I mean, there's a little bit of confusion in terms of who's in charge down in Dallas. And I've seen this before,
you
Jenna.
You were one of those players. I've seen it before. You were in that locker room, right? Wasn't Garrett your OC at the time?
Well, he was my OC in my latter years in Dallas. But before that, I came in under Bill Parcells in 2005. In the first couple of seasons, you know, you could tell that Bill Parcells was the final say with everything. Now, Jerry Jones still had his name on the checks. But Bill Parcells was the one that was running things. But then they decided to move on from Bill Parcells. He resigned in that offseason after the 2006 playoff loss to the Seattle Seahawks. And they decided to go out and hire Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator from Miami before they hired the head coach, Wade Phillips. So as you can understand, there's a little bit of confusion in terms of who the players are supposed to listen to. You have a 13-3 year in 2007 in Wade's first year, and everybody knows players are going to be on their best behavior the first year of a new head coach. But then that following season with the same cast of characters, you run it back and you're 8-8 and you miss the playoffs. Well, why did you underachieve? Well, you underachieved because the players didn't know who to listen to, whether it was Jason Garrett, whether it was Wade Phillips, whether it was Jerry Jones. And to me, that's the problem with the 2019 Dallas Cowboys.
NFL players need to hear one voice. And that's why you're saying the head coach as well as the owner need to be on the same page. They need one voice. You need to focus on football. That same voice that you hear every day, that has to be echoed from the owner. And that head coach, that's the one voice that you need to hear. Because at the end of the day, when you're talking about your play, that's the guy that you answer to on a more regular basis than the owner.
But if you, pardon me, but if your head coach has a strong enough voice, he can communicate to the players, you're going to hear from the owner all the time. Ignore it. You're going to hear him question my job and question your job. I am the voice. You know who could do that? Bill Parcells, Joe Torre in New York with George Steinbrenner, Doc Rivers right now with Steve Ballmer at the LA Clippers. We have some flamboyant, boisterous owners either presently or historically in sports. Jimmy Johnson could deal with it. The coaches with the Dallas Cowboys in their history who have enough temerity, if you will, have enough fortitude in their and strength of their convictions can make it so their voice is the one that matters.
And it will work for a time, but look at this. Jimmy Johnson, he walked away.
4 years.
He walked away. Yeah. Bill Parcells walked away. There's a reason why those guys are leaving. It's because the owner wants to insert himself in football decisions, and he oversteps as far as his head coaches are concerned.
I understand that. The point that I'm trying
to... I think you're undervaluing the point, though, in terms of the messaging that's going to the players in the locker room.
And that's totally fair.
Because that's a critical factor.
And it's totally fair, and it's something I can't speak to. You know what I mean? Being a player in the locker room, as far as my coach is giving me one message, my owner's giving me another, what I think sometimes gets lost in the wash, though, and what I think gets undervalued generally when we talk about the Cowboys' power structure is the owner's number one job, though, if he is also the GM, is to... So let me rephrase it, actually. What if Jerry Jones has been a mediocre owner in relation to the head coach, but a great general manager for the head coach? Is that fair? Like, his general manager side of things, supplying the roster with talent, making sure that those talented players are happy and paid, that they are in camp, that they that you have enough to compete with. He's done a great job in that regard. And I would say that's the most important, if you're going to have a GM owner be the same person, the most important part of it. The other stuff is unnecessary distractions. I agree with it. But I still would rather have that than a faceless name owner who's cheap and we don't draft well on the GM side of things, and I'm always fighting an uphill battle.
An owner that doesn't draft well and is cheap, that's the worst case scenario. But if you're trying to win, you need an owner that's going to supply you. And if he's a GM, he has to supply you with quality players. Then he needs to allow the coach to do his job. The best businesses are run when they say, listen, I'm going to hire a CEO. I'm going to hire a COO that just go and do your job. And I'm going to allow you to do your job. They haven't allowed Jason Garrett to do his job. He gets questions at every game. Every single game, he gets questioned. And that can't be easy as a coach. That's what he signed up for. But some of those other coaches, they got out because of that same reason.
Yeah, I think Jerry Jones has undermined his head coach. And Nick, I understand the way you're framing it. I just don't think it's completely fair. I don't think it has to be an owner that comes out and talks all the time and supplies his head coach with good players. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, an owner that doesn't go out and spend money
There's
on any players.
Version.
There's got to be something in the middle there. But in terms of what you're saying, the most important thing is, I mean, if the most important thing was getting the most talented players that are out there, then the most talented teams would always win. But that's not the case in the National Football League. Bill Parcells said it all the time. The best players don't always make the best team, but the best team always wins. And the best team, in part, has a lot to do with the head coach being able to have consistency in messaging and then the ownership group empowering that head coach to make the final say when it comes to football decisions. See Tom Coughlin in 2011.
Look, and that may be why this might not be the most appealing job opening should Jason That's Garrett right. leave. When we talk about guys like Ron Rivera, big personalities wanting to come in. All right, time now for Where Would You Like to Be? Sponsored by Visa. Everywhere you want to be, and we would love to be in Foxborough Sunday when Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs face Tom Brady and the Patriots. Mahomes is 0-2 in his young career against Brady, and while some say Mahomes has the advantage here, he knows what he's up against with this stifling Patriots defense.
They're not going to give us a lot of opportunities. I mean, they're a very good defense and very sound with what they do. And so it's about taking what's there, and then whenever you get the big shot, the big play, then make sure you hit that and score touchdowns when you do.
Nick, who's got the edge on Sunday, Patrick Mahomes or the Patriots defense?
It's not a huge edge, but the edge on the Chiefs offense versus Patriot defense matchup goes to Patrick Mahomes because saw him twice last year, both games, struggled mightily in the first half and then lit it up in the second half. Both games, 31 second half points while mounting a double-digit comeback in that second half. Two in both games, take the lead in the fourth quarter. The first time around, took the lead twice in the fourth quarter. Second time around, took the lead twice in the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs' defense just couldn't hold against a more potent Patriot offense last year.
And there was a fluky roughing the passer on Chris Jones in that AFC Championship game.
Well, in the AFC Championship game, there was a lot of stuff that really was questionable, but it happened. Listen, the Patriots won. In overtime, there wasn't anything questionable. Patriots got the coin toss. Chiefs couldn't stop them. But Patrick Mahomes, the AFC Championship game should be noted, was without Kareem Hunt, something that you wondered because he was such a big part of their Week 6 game against New England last year. How would the Chiefs do with that? They dealt with it fine. And what we've seen, Brian, from this great Patriot defense is they do seem to struggle with speed.
Yeah.
Houston got them with speed. And nobody has the speed the Kansas City Chiefs do. I also think Patrick Mahomes, who's coming off what I considered one of the worst games of his career, last two games, he's been missing open guys. One game was really windy, but still, he didn't look as sharp as you would have liked to hope. I don't think he's going to have three bad games in a row. So I think for all those reasons, the edge in that matchup goes to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense.
I think when you play in Foxborough, the natural edge always goes to the Patriots defense. And they've been really, really good at home, getting 7 interceptions there. It's been impressive. This is how it kind of swings to the Kansas City Chiefs. If you can get some production out of your third best guy, that means Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman, who each – have had zero catches in the last game. In the last three games, combined 10 catches, 151 yards. That's just not going to be enough. But you need some production out of your third guy. Bill Belichick takes away your first and second guy pretty regularly. Even sometimes they allow your first guy to go off, and then the second and third guy can't go off. And so they're going to take away someone. This is how you beat them. You put those linebackers in a bad situation. You put them in a situation where they can't use their keys. That week six game, they used Kareem Hunt, 80 yards rushing, 105 yards out of the backfield. That's how you put those linebackers in a bind. You get away from their blitz. If you're able to do that, what Patrick Mahomes is able to do, then the edge kind of swings over to the Chiefs.
Well, both of you talked about the wide receivers from the Chiefs. Now, speed is the ultimate equalizer. Speed kills. But one of the things that we've seen Bill Belichick coach defenses struggle with is mobile quarterbacks. Look at their two losses this year. They lost to Lamar Jackson, and they lost to Deshaun Watson. So I look at this situation. For me, it's going to come down to Pat Mahomes' playmaking ability, the opportunities to get outside of the pocket, extend the down, and allow those receivers a little more time to separate from what I think is the best secondary in the National Football League within the New England Patriots. I think that's going to be a critical key, but also not turning the football over. Yeah. And that's what Pat Mahomes has been really good at this year. Of quarterbacks with 8-plus starts, he has the fewest turnovers, 2 interceptions, and 2 lost fumbles. So if he can protect the football, I think that's a major key. You saw it in the regular season matchup they had last year, a couple of early turnovers in that game.
Especially the one right before the half that took points off the board.
Exactly. It dictated the complexion of it. So if you don't turn the football over, if you can keep the disparity in time of possession a little closer than you did in your two matchups last year, I think that's where the Kansas City Chiefs can allow their offense to take over. And I would agree with Nick that that offense is slightly better. I give them a slight edge over that Pats defense, even if it's in Foxborough.
Well, while the Pats defense has maybe taken a step back the last couple of weeks, so has Patrick Mahomes. How much blame would you put on that inconsistent run game as maybe a reason why he's been struggling?
I don't actually think that's it. He's just been missing guys.
Yeah.
It's been really weird to see. It's not that all of a sudden teams have schemed the guys not running wide open, that they've caught up to it. It's plays that Patrick made almost every time, it felt, through the first 24 games of his career. The last couple games, guys are running open, he's missing them. He missed Kelsey in the end zone the other game. He missed, who was it? I think it was Pringle, actually. I don't know why Pringle was in the game. But he missed Pringle on one, if I'm remembering correctly. Tyreek Hill, he missed him on one. And so he just hadn't been sharp. And you can't say it's the knee injury, because his first game back from the knee injury, which they actually lost, he was spectacular in that game against the
Tennessee,
Titans.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they fell apart at the end. But the reason I also think the Chiefs have an edge is neither Patrick nor Andy Reid, I think, are intimidated by the Patriots. Andy Reid has, the only time the Patriots in the entire Tom Brady era have lost a game at home, they were leading at halftime, was against Alex Smith and the Kansas City Chiefs a few years ago. The game 5 years ago, when everyone's like, oh, the Monday night game, oh, it's the end of Tom Brady. That was against Andy Reid and Alex Smith and the Kansas City Chiefs. Last year, they were down 14-6 and I think 14-0 or 10-0 at halftime of the two games. In the first halves of those two games, Mahomes had 0 touchdowns, 2 picks, and a 54 rating. In the second half of those two games, 7 touchdowns, 0 picks, and a 140 passer rating. He came out after halftime, after the Chiefs or the Patriots got to see him for a half and lit them up. Only the Raiders has Mahomes had a higher passer rating in his career against than the Patriots, teams he's played at least twice. So I don't think they're scared of this matchup. That's one of the edges they have in Foxborough, I think, typically, is teams sometimes beat themselves before that game even starts because of the intimidation factor.
One of the things that I'm thinking about here is, what role will LeSean McCoy play? Can you get him just to get going a little bit? Obviously, he hasn't been a big-time threat in the run game. I feel like they've been saving him just a little bit. But if he can give you some edge in the pass game, get outside of the edge, allow them to catch the ball out of the backfield, he can give you some edge as far as the screens, that aggressive blitzing defense. That's how you beat them. You screen them right behind them, score some touchdowns. LeSean McCoy should play a role in this.
Who wins the game?
I'll go Kansas City Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs, I assume.
Oh, no, I said this a month ago.
I'm not going to bet against the Patriots in Foxborough.
Yeah!
You know I ain't going to do it. I'll let these two guys do that.
No problem.
That's Brian not what Westbrook. You do when somebody gets dunked on.
Well, it's different.
You want to play a little in or out while these guys argue?
Let's play.
Let's play. Here we go. Jerry Jones says it's, quote, frustrating that we're not running it down the other team's throats. Zeke has gone 4 straight games without cracking the 100-yard mark. That's the worst stretch of his career. Can he? Start with you. You in or out on the Cowboys needing to run more to get back on track?
Jenna, I'm in on the Cowboys needing to run the ball more. The Chicago Bears are a top 10 run defense, but it hadn't been the same since week five. They're allowing 115 yards per game, and that's because they're missing Akeem Hicks, their defensive tackle, Pro Bowl caliber player. I mean, they haven't given up 100 yards rushing over the last four games, but I think that's in part because those teams got away from running the yep. football. They got down early. I think the Dallas Cowboys have to start fast, and a big part of that is Zeke running the ball early and often.
I'm out on this. I think the Dallas Cowboys offense is great. I think Dak is having his best season of his career. He's doing really well. The defense needs to play better. They need to get some turnovers. They need to stop giving up the chunk plays, plus 20 plays, 17 of those already this season. Defense has to play better. They don't need to run the ball anymore.
I never thought I'd see the day. An all-pro running back throw the ball, run.
He already got paid. Don't worry about it.
I don't know what I'm seeing here. Next candy's going to tell me D tackles is unimportant. position in the league. I'm in for this specific matchup. I think the way the Bears win is force Dak into turnovers. Zeke is, even though he's having not the season he hoped by his standards, he doesn't fumble the football. He doesn't put the ball on the ground. I think that if the Cowboys can play the Bears even in the turnover battle, they will win the football game. I don't think they're going to be able to play him even, by the way, which is why I think they're going to lose. But if they feed Zeke, that's their best path. So I am in for this week.
All right, a new column from NBC Sports Boston suggests that this season may be the last for Tom Brady in New England. Brady could be a free agent in 2020 if he and the Patriots cannot agree on a new deal. Canty, you in or out on Brady playing for the Patriots next season?
Jenna, I'm in just because I don't know that they have an alternative up in New England. I mean, they traded away Jimmy G a couple of years ago. Who are you going to rely on, Jared Stidham? I don't have a lot of confidence in that. This is an organization that expects to compete for championships. I don't see them parting ways with Brady, even though they don't have the contract in place.
I agree with you. I'm in. When is the right time to get rid of the GOAT? The right time is when you have someone behind him. You saw it in San Francisco years ago with Joe Montana to Steve Young. You saw it in Green Bay. Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. They don't have that next guy here in New England.
All right, here's why I'm out, because I don't think they're going to make the Super Bowl. I think if they make the Super Bowl, everything gets patched up. You guys are looking at it solely from the perspective of why would the Patriots move on from Brady? What if Tom Brady's ready to move on from the Patriots? He asked for a contract extension a year ago, coming off three straight Super Bowl appearances, two victories, and a year removed from a league MVP. And they said, nah, bro, we'll talk to you later. And now this year, he clearly feels like they have not supplied him with adequate weapons around him. If this season ends poorly and Brady wants to keep playing, I would imagine that Brady might at least see what the LA Chargers, they got a house out there, his wife likes it out there. You don't think Tom Brady looks at Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Austin Eckler and Hunter Henry and says, man, I wouldn't be looking like no 42-year-old if I had those weapons. So I just, unless they make the Super Bowl, I think there is a amicable separation between
those two. Yeah, I don't think any players are in a hurry to go play for the Chargers. I mean, there's a reason why Eli Manning's daddy didn't want him to go there on draft day. Which one of those two quarterbacks in the 2004 draft class doesn't have a Super Bowl?
The weather in L.A. is the decision-maker.
Which one of those quarterbacks doesn't have a chance?
Yeah, but one
of them.
But that was, by the way, when Eli's dad steered him away, they were the San Diego Chargers. Now they're the L.A. Chargers playing in the maybe the media capital of the world, playing in that beautiful new stadium.
Still the same owner, though?
You get 42, 43, you need more weapons around you. The Chargers do have a lot of weapons.
Didn't Tom Brady put his house up for sale?
Oh, the day after the Patriots wouldn't even a contract extension.
He maybe won't put out the door anyway.
I was denied.
Recently, Aaron Rodgers said his teammates have embraced their roles and aren't letting their egos get in the way of success. But Kenny, you in or out on Rodgers needing to have a bigger role for the Packers to make a Super Bowl run?
Jenna, I'm in on that just because that Packers defense isn't what we thought it was early on in the season. They're 28th in total defense right now, 14th in points. If the Packers are going to get where they want to go this year, they're going to have to ask Aaron Rodgers to do more. But I think in part it's going to be the offensive line playing better and the running game being able to give that offense more balance. That's how you're going to get the best version of number 12.
You know, I'm in. I know I said I'm out, but I'm in. I think that in the biggest games, you have to have your best player play the most and the best. And that's who Aaron Rodgers is. In the biggest games, he's going to play the best. I do like the fact that they run the ball a little bit more. They got Jones and Williams involved. But Aaron Rodgers has to be his best if they want to go far.
Aside from getting to the opposing quarterback, this defense has not been very good this year. I don't think the defense all of a sudden going to get dramatically better. That means for the Packers to beat the Saints, Seahawks, to have any chance against the San Francisco 49ers who whooped them a couple weeks ago, Rodgers is going to have to play like the best player in football. He's going to have to play like an MVP. He's going to play like Aaron Rodgers from a few years ago, so I'm in. I think they've done a good job making it so he didn't have to have that activated all year, but he's going to have to go into that Superman mode here pretty soon, so I am in. If my Super Bowl pick out of the NFC is going to stay alive.
All right.
Our Super Bowl pick. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.